is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
The biggest analytic we continue to look at is just paint touches. The points per possession just goes up astronomically when the ball gets to the paint versus not. And that's something that we track, and that's something where a lot of our schemes defensively are built on, okay, how do we limit paint touches? And then vice versa, offensively, how do we generate paint touches?
Dylan Mihalki is the Director of Analytics and Assistant Director of Video Operations at Oklahoma University under head coach Porter Moser, where he previously served as a graduate assistant. Prior to joining the Sooners, Mihalki spent 3 seasons as a student manager for the men's basketball team at the University of Iowa under head coach Fran McCaffrey. Take some notes as you listen to this episode with Dylan Mihalki, Director of Analytics and Assistant Director of Video Operations at Oklahoma University.
Hey, Hoopheads, find the shooting machine that meets your team's exact training needs this holiday season with Dr. Dish Basketball's December end-of-year super sale. Shop now until December 29th to unlock their biggest deal ever. Buy one Dr. Dish, get one free. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Dave Hickson, Basketball Hall of Famer and former men's basketball head coach at Amherst College. And you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, and we are pleased to be joined for the second time by Dylan Mihalki, Men's Basketball Director of Video Operations and Analytics at the University of Oklahoma. Dylan, welcome back.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you guys having me on again.
Absolutely. We are thrilled to have you on for our second time. Put you in a, I don't know if it's as exclusive of a club as it used to be, but certainly we haven't had that many people on twice. So welcome back. We're excited to be able to talk to you and just kind of get an update on where you are in your career. When we last left you, you were in a graduate assistant position at the University of Oklahoma. And since then, you have progressed through one job into another new job. So talk to us a little bit about sort of the titles that you've had and kind of where you are, and then we'll dive into what you're doing day to day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been unbelievable. I guess almost, you know, going into my third year here at OU under Coach Moser, and it's been an unbelievable ride, and it's been it's been really, really amazing how Coach has kind of elevated my role each year that I've been here. I obviously, like you mentioned, started off as a, GA when I came in. I had never met, Coach Moser, and, I just have obviously heard great things about him, and, was blessed enough to get an opportunity as a GA, to work for him and to learn from him and such. Over the past, going to my third year now, we've developed an amazing, relationship on and off the court. He's been an amazing role model, as a father, as a husband, as a coach, as, a male role model for me to follow after and learn from. And so, it's been awesome. And, like I mentioned, starting from a GA and then, to be able to, obviously now work full time from, saying I'm blessed would be an understatement, but also, I think, the best thing for me that I've learned and that I've, grown in is just being able to, being able to work for him is something where I think a lot of times, you know, I shouldn't even say the role of, you know, being a video coordinator, but, you know, just any staff member, you kind of learn the way of your, you know, head coach and how he operates and how he works. And, you know, that's been able to give me a unique sense of belonging, but also a unique sense of, you know, being able to know, you know, what he wants and when he wants it and kind of how he wants, you know, different things in terms of scouting, recruiting, you know, game planning, you know, practice, et cetera. So
how long were you into your tenure, whether it was as a GA or as you got more into the video room side of it, where you felt like you started to get a handle on those things that you just talked about in terms of what Coach Moser was looking for, when he was looking for it? When do you feel like you kind of had a feel for exactly what he was looking for?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, it definitely took me, you know, probably 6 months or so into my first year. But, you know, it was, you know, the, you know, good part about it was I had, you know, amazing assistant coaches to learn under, you know, I had an amazing, you know, video coordinator when I was a GA, Clayton Custer. And so I had great people kind of pouring into me. And I also had great, I had great people to learn from and, you know, really, you know, take after. And so they were kind of, you know, obviously when it's, you know, the first year for everybody, in a new program, everybody's kind of learning it. And so it kind of allowed me to not be the, you know, the new guy on the block, cause we were all kind
of
new to OU, so to speak. So I think that helped. And also, you know, I pride myself on being a quick learner and being able to adapt to, you know, different situations and stuff. And so that also helped me.
What was the transition like going from being a GA and kind of working the job from that angle and obviously having to go to school and that part of it to, okay, now you're going to get hired on as a full-time coach and sort of transition. And I know that, again, as a GA, not to say that that's not a full-time coaching job because we all know that it is, but just from a mindset standpoint, how did you approach it?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, for me, you know, obviously on a day-to-day sense, you know, being a GA, you got to go to class, you got to manage that whole side of things. And so it was really nice not to have to, you know, go to class. And, you know, it was, you know, obviously a full-time, you know, work job there. But also I think, you know, just the professionalism of it and, you know, the availability of it. But also, you know, I think when you're a full-time staff member as opposed to a GA, you just, you feel like you have more accountability and you have more ownership of your craft and such. And so, yes, you know, when I was doing a GA, I was doing, you know, a lot of video room duties and helping out, you know, our video coordinator with a lot of, you know, projects and doing, you know, that was the bulk of my job. You know, but now as, you know, blessed enough to be, you know, head video coordinator, I'm able to really pour into our GAs now, and I'm able to pour into, you know, their video work and, you know, how they're helping out the assistant coaches. And it kind of gives me a unique sense because I was in their shoes, you know, not too long ago. And so I'm able to really help them out and kind of pour into them, you know, similar to how I was poured into and stuff. And so that's a fulfilling experience. And you know, being full-time just gives me more ownership of my craft and gives me, you know, just a better sense of, you know, kind of belonging and a better, you know, rapport with the assistant coaches and stuff like that.
All right. Give us an idea of day to day. What are some of the things, and again, you don't have to go through your daily schedule, but just what are some of the things that day to day you're doing in your current position as director of video operations and analytics? What does that look like day to day?
Yeah. You know, I think for me, you know, obviously every day is different, whether you're in the off season or in the preseason or now, you know, in regular season, right. You know, but I think, you know, for me, a lot of, you know, the day just starts with, you know, getting on the same page with the assistant coaches. If they need anything video wise for their scouts, you know, I'm pretty heavily involved with every single scout, whether that's offense, defense, you know, personnel, you know, special teams, all of that. I'm pretty heavily involved in every part of the scout because, you know, every part of it has to do with video or analytics in some way. And so, no, it's just getting on the page with, you know, getting on the same page as all the assistant coaches and the scout coach for each game. And then, you know, ultimately just getting, you know, making sure, you know, all the assistants are, you know, through video speaking the same language to coach and stuff, because you don't want any disconnect between, you know, the offense and the defense, and you just kind of want to make sure everything's synced up. And, you know, the one thing that, you know, has been really, really a blessing for me is, you know, throughout my 3 years here at OU, we've had, you know, some of our assistants, you know, have really good job opportunities to go off to, you know, head coaching jobs, et cetera. And so we've had some staff turnover. And it's been, you know, a blessing for me because A, I've been able to work with a diverse array of just tremendous, tremendous people. But also I've been able to, you know, now being, you know, one of the people who have been here the longest under coach, I'm able to really help everybody make sure the terminology is on the same page. You know, this we call something different than another program might call it, or, you know, whatever, and, you know, show them, okay, this is how we do scouts. This is how, you know, coach likes his practice plans to be formatted. This is how he likes his, you know, scouting routine, et cetera. And so, you know, it's kind of been a blessing in disguise for me as I'm able to, you know, obviously I came from being, you know, a GA, the new kid on the block, to now, you know, I'm one of the more experienced people in the program, especially
KG veteran.
Exactly. I was going to say, nice. Don't look That's like funny. It all the time. But no, somehow I'm the veteran around here now. So, it's been, like I said, that's been a blessing. And, you know, to be honest with you, it's made me even more valuable to a lot of our assistant coaches. So that's really helped me.
How do you guys break down who scouts what opponent? Does one assistant coach get the responsibility for scouting one particular opponent? Is it broken up by offense and defense? What's your role in that scout? Just go through, let's say you're preparing for, just as an example, a conference game. What does that look like in terms of who's scouting it, and then how you go about getting the material that need, putting that scouting report together? Just kind of walk us through start to finish what that looks like.
No, that's a fantastic question. And, you know, I think, you know, obviously every head coach has their own unique style in which they do it. You know, I think the way that we have it, you know, orchestrated here at OU, I think has been a really really beneficial scouting process for all of us, you know, because we typically, you know, we'll, because, you know, the new rule now where you can have, you know, five assistant coaches plus the head coach now, you know, we'll rotate the, you know, scouts four ways. And so, you know, for the conference games, it gets a little dicey, but for the most part, for non-conference, it's one in every four games. We'll just rotate who has the scout, and then, you know, we have two coaches doing, you know, offense, two coaches doing defense, and then one coach kind of doing, you know, our rebounding and special teams and kind of intermediate between both. And so I think it's good because every game we got, you know, obviously one lead scout coach on it, but then we also have two assistant coaches watching each side of the ball and can kind of provide an extra sense of, you know, an extra set of eyes on it and be able to just continue to have some stability where it's not a different offensive person every game or a different defensive person every game, to where you're switching up things, you know, drastically so much, you know, game to game and stuff. So I think we have a pretty streamlined, good scouting process. And like I said, the, you know, NCAA changing the rules this year to be able to have two additional coaches on the court has really helped us be able to just, you know, get more hands on deck. So.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think when you put that scout together and you're getting it to coach, what's the format look like? What does he want to see once that scout is fully prepared? What are the things that are most important to him?
Yeah, no, I'm realizing now I didn't answer the second part of your question there. You know, I think for me, video wise, you know, and I should kind of tie this back to the previous question. You know, I actually handle all of our personnel for every scout. And so, you know, using my video and my analytics knowledge, you know, I'm able to put together our personnel reports for every player. I'm able to, you know, get the clips that we show the players. I'm able to, you know, obviously we do, you know, kind of a PowerPoint template slide to show the guys as well. So I'm able to do all that. Obviously, I, you know, utilize analytics heavily in how we prepare for opponents, whether that's saying, oh, somebody's better, you know, catch and shoot versus off the dribble. This guy's more efficient going right than left. Whatever that, you know, analytic is, I infuse that in all the scouting reports, and I try to, keep it simple for our players, but I'm able to translate it to the coaches and stuff. But in terms of, you know, kind of how we prepared for coach, you know, this kind of goes, you know, ties back to me being kind of mixed with every coach during the process, is I'm able to, you know, organize all of the, you know, different plays our opponents run. So I help the scout coach organize that and make sure, you know, all the terminology and all the plays are, you know, correctly formatted and stuff. And then, you know, offensively, I'm able to, you know, look at, you know, work with, you know, like I said, the offensive coaches on, you know, different actions that might hurt the opponent, you know, different ways they're guarding ball screen coverages, and just kind of do, you know, almost a quality control check on it and make sure all the, you know, video processes and the video is organized in the best way that coach would want it.
When you're breaking down and looking at the various tapes of all these opponents that you've had an opportunity to study over the last 3 years.
Yep.
From an X's and O's standpoint, obviously your knowledge, I'm sure you would characterize as having grown tremendously in terms of just your understanding of the X's and O's on both sides of the ball. But when you think about a particular area of X and O's that you feel like you've really grown in terms of your understanding, maybe compared to where you were when you first started spending a lot of time in the video room, where has the biggest growth come for you from just the sheer amount of video that you're getting a chance to watch?
No, that's a tremendous question. Because when you're in the grunt of it, you know, a lot of times you don't realize, you know, you don't take a 30,000 foot view and step back and realize, you know, all that I've learned. But, you know, macro level, the biggest thing that I've learned in, you know, 3 years here at OU, and then even before, you know, doing a lot of video work at the University of Iowa as a manager, is just, you know, I know it somewhat goes without saying, but I don't think it's as obvious to people who don't study it as in depth as you know, I or other people do. It's just there's really not one way to win in college basketball. I feel like there are so many diverse teams with so many unique skill sets, schemes, whatever you want to say, that that have success. You know, some teams force, you know, don't let you shoot a lot of threes and they have success. Some teams let you shoot a lot of threes, but they contest them all and, you know, and they still have success. Some teams run, you know, super fast. Some teams play super slow. Some teams run a heavy post-up offense. Some teams run a heavy ball screen offense, whatever that is. There's so many different ways to find success, you know, in all levels of basketball. But for me, you know, I'd be able to see it in college basketball is, there's so many ways to find success, and there's so many, you know, different, you know, different styles, and, you know, whether that's even different, you know, personnel schemes. Some teams play, you know, two bigs and have success. Some teams play, you know, one big and then four smaller guards. And so there's just so many different ways that you can have success. And that's been one thing I've, you know, really, really learned is just, you know, I've been able to see so many great coaches, so many great teams, and just their schemes. And, you know, the biggest thing I would advise, you know, a younger, you know, shoot, manager, GA, you know, video coordinator, you know, even assistant coaches, just keep a library of all the best, you know, best plays you see, best schemes you see, you know, just interesting strategies that you see from different coaches, because there's so many smart coaches out there. And, you know, the last thing you want is to look back on your, you know, 2 years or whatever and be like, shoot, I didn't save that play that I liked and stuff. So, you know, one exercise I've been doing is just every single scout and every single, you know, opponent we face, you know, I'll save, you know, at minimum, you know, 3 to 4 sets that I just thought were unique and good. And sometimes, you know, I get to the end of the year and I'm like, hey, you know what, that wasn't that good, or, you know, that wasn't the best variation of it or whatnot. But at least you're able to learn and just getting that process of, just gathering, because there's so many smart coaches out there. And there's, you know, at any level, whether that's D1, 2, 3, NAIA, high school, NBA, you know, from the bottom down, there are so many great coaches out there. And it's something where at least, you know, in the video room, you're able to see so much. And, you know, it's one of those where I've kept a running library of just the best, you know, the best schemes, the best sets, the best concepts, you know, both offensively and defensively that I've been able to see.
What's a team or a coach that, as you were going through their film, that really caught your eye? Like, oh, these guys are running something, whether it's something unique or maybe they're just running something that other teams run, but they're running it maybe better, or they're just executing so well. Is there a team or a coach? And again, I'm not asking you to point out or do whatever, but just, is there anybody that stands out like that to you that you can think of off the top of your head?
Wow. You know, the number one school that comes to mind is, I think Baylor does a fantastic job. You know, last year, I think they were second in the country in offense. And you know, the year before they were really high as well. And they do a tremendous job at getting their guards, shots, getting their guards, you know, a great advantage off a ball screen, you know, just getting their guards downhill. They do a great job at just being able to, you know, really use, you know, efficient, effective spacing. They have really just modern concepts that they use. And so, you know, I'm constantly really, really blown away by what they do, you know, from an offensive standpoint. I think they just do a tremendous job. You know, I've been able to see it in the league now 2 years, and, you know, obviously going into a third year now. And they do a tremendous job, you know, like I said, getting their guard shots, but also just having really modern schemes in pick and roll. I think, you know, I think a lot of times people think of, you know, great strategies as offensively, but, you know, defensively, I think Iowa State's got one of the best defensive schemes that I've been able to see. Is just, you know, it's interesting. They analytically, they're, you know, very, I'll say weird for lack of a better term, but they're a very analytically weird team to where they'll let you shoot a lot of threes, and, you know, they'll foul a lot, but they'll force a ton of turnovers. They'll get a ton of defensive rebounds. You know, they don't let you shoot any layups. Weirdly enough, when you shoot layups, you know, I think they have like the worst field goal percentage defense at the rim. But they don't let you get there. And so they do a great job escaping the paint. They do a great job at flooding. They scramble so well, and they keep putting out fires. And so, they make it really hard to score on. But also just their concepts and how hard they play, I think is a really, you know, it's a testament to Coach Alsterberger's, passion, his strategy, but also, you know, his competitiveness and how hard he gets his guys to play.
Really interesting to me when you think about just the amount of time that somebody like you in your position that you spend watching film and going through, and obviously you're learning from Coach Moser and you're seeing all the things that you guys do, and not only are you seeing it, but you're also getting the why behind it and everything else that goes along with that. So there's a huge learning process there. But then it's also, like we just talked about, the ability to see all these other coaches and what they're doing and how they're scheming against what you guys are trying to do, and that X's and O's chess match that you go back and forth, and you're kind of seeing it all through the video. And to me, I think when you start talking about an ability to learn the game from an X's and O's standpoint as you continue to progress in your career, I can only imagine, again, how valuable that time spent in the video room, right? The most famous example, NBA-wise, Eric Spoelstra, right, who started out in the video room in the NBA, and now he's roundly considered the best coach in the league. And I don't think that's an accident that a guy who spent so much time early in his career watching so much film and just diving into that film to be able to learn. I just think it's a tremendous way to be able to increase your knowledge of the game. And it's something that not everybody gets that opportunity to be able to do that, depending upon which career path you take. And so I'm sure as you go on, you're going to see the benefits of that. I'm sure you're already feeling it right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, one of the greatest things somebody said this to me when I was younger. Forgive me whoever said it, but you really have to learn how to learn. And I think that's something where, you know, for me, I've been blessed enough to be able to really, I had great help, you know, from people at Iowa and stuff. But a lot of my, you know, video knowledge was, you know, self-taught. A lot of how I interpret and see analytics and kind of, you know, figure out how to, you know, dive deep in that is, you know, a lot of it's self-taught. And I think that process of learning how to learn something and just that growth, you know, really teaches you, you know, just great skills, but also teaches you a sense of, you know, curiosity. It teaches you a sense of, what's the word I'm looking for? It teaches you just a great ability, to solve problems. And I think there's a lot of times where, you know, for example, even, you know, Coach Bo being in the video room and, It gives you the opportunity to, you know, dive deep into, you know, a certain action or a certain team or a certain concept that you like and really, really just master it and stuff. And so, you know, it's nice. I'm blessed enough where, you know, in my role right now, I don't have to, you know, go out on the road and recruit. I don't have to, I don't, you know, get to do player development. You know, there's a lot of parts of my job that I don't get to do, but also it gives me an amazing sense to really dive into the film side of things and really dive into just different schemes and different concepts that I think are working at the highest level. And so, no, you hit the nail right on the head there. I think there's definitely not a coincidence why Coach Bolster has been so successful, and also, you know, just their organization has been so successful.
I know you use a lot of video with obviously your team when it comes to scouting your opponents. How do you guys use film with your own players in terms of bringing them in on an individual basis to be able to help them to see things and to be able to work on their individual game? What does that look like for your program there at OU?
Yeah, no, that's a great, I mean, that's a unbelievable question because, you know, that's one of the, you know, one of the many things that I think Coach Moser does so well is he is always so intentional about the process of getting better. You know, every single, I say every single, you know, 95% of the days before practice, you know, we do our get better session. And so that's, you know, normally 10 to 15 clips from the practice the day before or 2 days before, whatever that is, you know, from our last practice. And we just, you know, that's just a good solid 30 minutes of just teaching. And so, you know, that's him, you know, teaching our, you know, our new transfers or freshmen, you know, what a ice defense looks like, teaching them, this is how we set up catches, this is how we run a play, this is how we, you know, do little things on the basketball court. And he's so, Coach Moses is, he's so consumed about the little things and the details. He's such a detail oriented coach. And it's one of the many things that makes him just truly elite is, how he's so consumed with the details. And, you know, those get better sessions are really all about him teaching. And, you know, our guys love them because they feel like they're getting, you know, poured into on such an individual level, but also collectively it makes us better as a team. So that's, you know, that's most days before practice we'll do that. And then, you know, in terms of kind of different other individual things, you know, I'll pull at least, you know, five to 10 clips every day for each one of our players. And, you know, I'll, you know, either give them to, you know, one of our assistants to watch for them, or, you know, I'll, you know, send it to them myself and just kind of, you know, make a couple notes and such. But I'm always sending our guys film. I'm always sending them, you know, NBA guys to look at, or, you know, just different ways to get better. And I think that's something where, you know, all of our players just love basketball so much. And that's an easy and a really, you know, rewarding way that I can just pour into their, you know, pour into their basketball lives. And it all also just gets, you know, creates a great conversation, you know, starting point for me as well with them. So, no, we use a lot of film, like I said, on a team, but also individual level, you know, to help self-scout, but also just to, you know, help individual players with, you know, their offensive or defensive game and just kind of, you know, helping them just to continue to get better every single day.
What does the analysis of the practice film look like from one day to the next? Is that start with you breaking it down? Is that the entire staff going through the entire practice together? What is it? Just how do you guys divvy up the workload of going through the practice, and what does that look like in terms of the responsibilities of each staff member to make sure that you're going through the previous day's practice film to get what you need out of that to be prepared for the next practice?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, a lot of times after practice, we'll go up to the office and watch it as a staff, and just kind of talk through different things when it's fresh on our mind. And then, you know, I'll make sure, you know, all the assistants have practice on their computers that they can all go home and, you know, watch practice and, you know, break it down and, you know, break down, you know, if one of our coaches really focuses on, you know, the zone and our press D, you know, he'll watch that. If, you know, one of our coaches really focuses on our offense, he'll kind of have an eye for that. And we'll kind of break it down that way. And, you know, and then obviously, you know, we'll all come back together the next morning with some more clips, you know, for review and such. And then obviously Coach Moser will most of the time, you know, work with me on just kind of, you know, what 10, 15 clips we want to show the guys that next day before practice. You know, and then one other thing that I've done, you know, here at OU is I actually manually stat all of our practices through video. And so obviously through Sports Code, we'll, you know, I'll have different labels for every action that we do and every play type. So, you know, if it's a, you know, Milos Uzan, you know, ball screen where he scored from the right, you know, the right short corner, all that tagged. So where if, you know, in 2 weeks, we want to look back and say, how did Los score out of ball screens the last 2 weeks? I can pull up all the clips in the snap of the fingers, or all the times where our big man got a roll, you know, a basket off a roll at the rim. You know, I can just have all those already databased. So, you know, I chart post feeds, I chart post, you know, obviously post ups, I chart, you know, ball screens, off ball screens, you know, transition, paint touches, hockey assists, you know, there's deflections. There's so many different things that I chart through video. And so that really helps me be able to be like, okay, let me look, go back and show our, you know, our point guard, all of his assists and turnovers and paint touches from last week. You know, it's an easy way for me to pick out individualized clips, you know, or for example, even like if I want to, you know, if one of our guys, you know, is in a shooting slump and I want to send him all of his made threes from practice, you know, a month ago or 2 weeks ago, whatever, I can, you know, pull those up in the snap of a fingers and really be able to dive deep into that. And that also helps me just as I watch it, be able to look for different insights and stuff. So, so yeah, it's kind of how our post-practice, you know, video breakdown goes.
Whenever I hear these stories of all this statistical analysis and ability to go back and videotape practice, I always compare and contrast, Dylan, this with my own experience as a player. So I'm old. I was there playing college basketball from 1988 to 1992. So we, to my knowledge, I don't know if we ever filmed a practice. We may have filmed some of our you know, our team scrimmages, but I don't remember us ever filming practice. And I remember going through and there'd be things that would happen in practice and you'd be like, I wonder about that. Or I wonder, like, I didn't follow that guy or this, or, you know, and it's like all that stuff was kind of just kind of lost to history. And then I think about just, again, the level of detail that you're describing, that you're talking about, which, again, I know that what you guys are doing at Oklahoma is similar to what most Division I schools across the country now are doing, similar things in terms of filming practice and just the level and paying attention to detail and all that stuff. And I just think that the ability to, one, learn from that is tremendous. And then I guess the second part of it is, I think of it as a player, one of the things that, and I don't know if it's good or bad, but there's something to be said for when you're in practice that, again, going back to my era where practice kind of disappeared and there wasn't all the statistical proof of, hey, this guy is this and this guy is that and this is what's happening. And it was more sort of that old school, right? It's the difference between like the old school scout and the new school scout. Like the old school scout's like, I watch this guy and he can play. And the new school scout is, well, I've got reasons why, and I've got stats to back it up and this and that. And so I just wonder, do you ever get feedback from players? And again, they don't necessarily even know the difference between the way they are functioning in the game, the way somebody did 20 or 30 years ago, but just, it feels like, man, when you're playing in the game and you have the statistics and there's, I don't want to say pressure there, but there's obviously pressure there when you're playing in games. And then to have like every single moment of every single practice tracked, like, just, this is just me speaking. I'm not sure I would have loved that as a player. Now, maybe I would have, because maybe the stats would have showed that, you know, I was doing the things that I was supposed to do and it all would have panned out. But I still feel like it would maybe add just a certain degree of pressure with players. Is that a discussion that anybody ever has or do you guys talk about? Or is it just something that it is what it is and nobody even really thinks about it?
Yeah. No, that's a great thought, you know, point that you bring up, because, you know, I don't know how other programs do it. You know, we don't really, typically we don't show our players stats from practice. You know, I know some programs do, we just don't, because, you know, we don't want them either, you know, thinking too high, thinking too low and stuff. And, yeah, you know, generally, sure. And you know this from playing, but, you know, generally, you know, players know I'm shooting the ball well. I'm not shooting the ball great. I'm right, scoring sure. a lot. I'm not scoring sure. a lot. So, you know, I think genuinely players kind of know that. You know, occasionally with some of our players individually, I'll text them their stats just to give them an extra vote of confidence. But no, I mean, most of our statistics and, you know, individual, you know, stats like that in practice are more just for us as a staff to review and just kind of, you know, assist in making personnel decisions and assist in, you know, player development and, you know, kind of assist in other aspects of the program. But no, I mean, I think that's a great point you bring up because, you know, the last thing, you know, the last thing you want is for a player to get tight in practice because you worry about his, you know, practice stats. You know, that's something where,
yeah.
You know, you want to make them, you know, you want to make it a comfortable environment, not that they feel like they're, you know, being tracked every single sure. move they make.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. It's almost like, and not even so much when I think about it, I don't even think about necessarily like shooting stats from practice, but just I can remember times where I'm like, okay, we're doing some one-on-one drill or whatever, or playing full court and we're, you know, defending the ball, whatever. And you just get smoked and you get smoked and somebody yells at you. And then like that goes away. And then the next day in practice, I got to come back and I got to see the film of that. I'm like, oh, I'm not sure I'm that excited about that going back and seeing it. And that's more just what I'm thinking. And again, obviously there's the ability to learn from that, which is, I think, that obviously you as a coaching staff, and that's the direction that you're trying to spin it as a, hey, here's something that we have to work on, something that we can get better at. And it's just interesting though, for me, again, because I didn't experience any of that, that to think about what you guys have at your disposal as coaches in terms of the video and the analytics, and then what players as a result have at their fingertips to be able to use and to be able to see. And, you know, just you talking about, hey, I'm sending guys video every single day. Like, I think the only video I ever watched while I was playing was when we were watching it as a team. And of course we had VCRs and we're hitting the button and trying to get to the right play and all this stuff. And, you know, obviously somebody who was in your position was spending a lot of time running the FedEx and mailing tapes and meeting dudes to trade video and all this stuff. And clearly now that everything can be done digitally, it's just a different era. But it's interesting to me just to think about the compare and contrast to, you know, throw a player from my era into today's Division I basketball world and kind of see what that would feel like, and vice versa, to throw one of your guys into the era in the late 80s, early 90s, and just kind of see what the comparison would be like. That would be an interesting study to kind of get the psychological effects of both sides going different directions, if that makes any sense. I think it'd be kind of cool.
No, you're 100% right. And, you know, this is kind of a larger scale discussion, but just, you know, even in my, shoot, now 6 years that I've been in, you know, blessed enough to work in college basketball, I've seen the rise of, you know, technology, the rise of analytics, the rise in the, you know, just growing innovation of video products, video software, and just that, you know, go to a whole new level. And that's just in 6 years, you know, let alone in, you know, 12, you know, 25, whatever. And so, I mean, I think obviously as technology's grown, I think, you know, the game of basketball has, you know, grown as well, you know, both in strategy, but also in how we best use video, how we best use analytics, how we best use technology, and all the above. And so, no, I think, all that you said is, you know, so, so true. And, you know, it's also, I think it's one of the, you know, parts of my job that I'm most, you know, most grateful for is just, you know, Coach Moser is a very young 55, but, you know, he looked back on when he was playing, looked back on when he first got his, you know, first assistant coaching job and even first head coaching job, and just how different the game was, not just in the game of basketball, but everything surrounding the game of basketball from a scouting and analytics, a video perspective and stuff. And, you know, he would tell me stories about, you know, he would ask, hey, can we get that game from, you know, 20 minutes ago and, you know, three time zones away. And I'm like, yeah, coach, I can get that for you by, you know, the next 10 minutes and, right. you know, or whatever. And he's like, I used to have to go mail a VCR or, you know, he'll tell me these stories and stuff. And no, it's just, it's truly amazing how much, obviously technology is involved, on a world view, but also, specific to the game of basketball, how much, it's grown specifically in the game of basketball.
Yeah, no question. I mean, the capability that these different services have today to be able to pull things out and to be able to be as specific and, as you said, to find those certain actions with certain players and to be able to then instantaneously pull all those clips together, especially for somebody like yourself who, again, knows how to operate those systems and knows how to make them work and sing, for lack of a better way of saying it, and get the information out of there that you want and that you need. When you think about the analytics side of the game, and maybe not necessarily specific to your team, but just from an analytics standpoint, what are some things, what are some trends that you're seeing kind of across the college basketball landscape in the last couple of years, analytics wise? What are some things that people are talking about or things that you're paying attention to?
Wow, that's a great question. I think, you know, I think the biggest, you know, a lot of the biggest trends, you know, that I've seen lately, is just the, you know, and it's not necessarily even from a game to game or a, you know, season to season, you know, project or whatnot. But the biggest trend I've seen is just, you know, how teams are effectively using the transfer portal. And, you know, I don't know if the transfer portal will, you know, keep up with the rising, you know, crazy high numbers that it has been the last, you know, few years or so. But I think teams, more and more are just, you know, really diving deep into the analytics and really diving deep into the film breakdown of these transfer guys. And it's one of the things where, you know, generally, you know, a lot of times, even with high school freshmen, you know, they, you know, are either, you know, no brainers, or maybe they're guys that you might not think will come in and impact maybe year one, it might be year two, or it might be in a reserve role year one or whatever. But a lot of these transfer guys, you're, you know, getting them out of the transfer portal, you know, thinking they're coming in with a starting role and thinking that they really need to contribute day one to your program. And that's just not, you know, specific to OU. I think it's true for, you know, every program across the country. You know, but I think the one of the big, you know, kind of analytics, but also film, but also, you know, personality, you know, I think the transfer portal has just added so much to this recruiting cycle and the scouting process and being able to dive deep into, you know, transfers film and kind of see how their skills will translate to your system and how your system could translate to their skills and vice versa. You know, and also just how their personality will mesh with your coaching staff, your locker room, whatever that is. And then also the even bigger, you know, trick of it is, you know, okay, this guy put up great numbers at a, you know, mid major or whatever. How is that going to, you know, transfer over to the high major level? And can they, you know, go from being a starter on that team to a role player on this team? Can, you know, or vice versa? And so I think just the analytics behind the transfer portal has been something that fascinates me. Just the, you know, it's almost like, you know, being a, you know, NBA GM, to be honest with you, is just seeing how this free agent will, you know, come in and impact your team, positive or negative, you know, how their skills can, you know, blend in with your team and how, you know, and just kind of being able to really, really sit down and dive deep into the tape and see what works across levels and what might not work. And that's been something just analytic wise that I've been really, really fascinated on. And just I've been really trying to study the biggest analytic factors that I think are going to best determine a player's success in moving up or up levels, you know. And so that's been something I've been really curious about. I've been something I've really been studying. You know, I've gone back to previous years of the transfer portal and just kind of seen, okay, this, you know, 3-point shooting really translates between any level of college basketball, you know, rebounding really translates, or you know, but for example, assist to turnover ratio doesn't normally translate when the speed, the length, the athleticism goes up a level, you know. Just kind of analyzing different factors into that has been something that's really sparked sparked my curiosity, but also has been something I think has really, I've been trying to bring more and more to our staff, is just being able to figure out and kind of solve this whole transfer puzzle.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Is there anything specific to your program at OU that you've noticed with the transfer guys that you brought in that is a marker of their ability to play at your level? Is there anything that stands out? I don't want you to give away secrets, but is there one or two things that you can say, okay, we know when we see this, we know this guy is going to have a pretty good chance of success. Obviously there's not a huge long track record, but just what are you seeing so far?
You know, the biggest example that comes to mind, we have this one guy on our team named Latre Darthard, who's a fifth-year senior, grad transfer. This is last year. Came from Utah Valley, was coached by Mark Madsen there. And I remember I went into his, analytics, and I saw that that Utah Valley was just an unbelievable defensive team when he was off the court – or on the court, excuse me. And when he went off the court, their just defensive numbers just almost plummeted. And, I kind of was like, that's interesting. Let me dive more into that. And, last year they gave up 0.9 points per possession when he was on the court. And then, when he was off the court, they gave up 1.07 points per possession. And so just a super stark difference. And I immediately was like, why is that? Is there something he's doing, that's not a coincidence. And so, I dove into the tape. They played, a litany of high major teams last year. They won a lot of games against high major teams last year. And I was just able to see that, he guarded the best offensive player every game. He, hit 36% of his threes on high volume. He shot 89% from the foul line. And just there were different barometers, different key factors that I saw that said, I think that can, translate up a level and really help us in a positive winning situation. Now, does that mean he's going to average, 14 points a game here like he did at Utah Valley? Maybe, probably not. But does that mean he will keep up the same efficiency and keep up with the same, defensive leverage and keep up with the same, ability to, guard the ball at this level and play off-ball defense and take charges? Yeah. And so that's just one example that I just think, I was able to clearly see different translatable factors that I think could, really be scalable to a higher level.
So that's kind of the way that you guys utilize analytics with the transfer portal. What do you guys do in terms of just looking at how you guys perform in a given game? What are some of the things that some of the metrics that you guys look at that you feel are most important that lead to you guys winning? Obviously, at this point when we're recording, you've only played one game this season, so we're talking about previous seasons. How does what you do from an analytics standpoint impact winning and losing? What are some of the things you're looking at?
Yeah, no, that's a tremendous question. That's something we constantly talk about as a program, is just what are the biggest factors for us winning games? And that might be different for every head coach, and that might be different for every program across the country. I think the biggest thing that we look at, I think Coach Moser does a really, really great job at coaching shot selection. So that thankfully hasn't really been a problem for us in the first, 2 years and now into year three. He really emphasizes, getting to the paint and either, finishing at the paint or spraying for threes. And so, we don't take a lot of mid-range shots early in the clock, at least. And, you know, so I think the biggest things for us, though, have been, you know, we really try to win the turnover battle, especially, you know, we try to limit turnovers offensively and force turnovers defensively. And I think the biggest kind of, you know, byproduct of that is, you know, you don't even allow an opponent to get a shot on rim. And so they can't get an offensive rebound. They can't draw a foul. And so, and you might get a transition bucket that has a higher points per possession expected value than a half court possession. So that's been one thing we've been trying to emphasize, is obviously limiting turnovers offensively and forcing turnovers defensively. So that's been one thing for us. And then the biggest analytic we continue to look at is just paint touches. You know, there's such a great NBA stat that I unfortunately cannot remember off the top of my head, but it's just how the points per possession just goes up astronomically when the ball gets to the paint versus not in the paint. And so that's something we track is, okay, how often are we getting in the paint? You know, what percent of possessions do we get to the paint? What percent of possessions do we allow the opponent to get to the paint? And what's the, you know, point per possession on a paint touch possession or a no paint touch possession, both offensively and defensively. And that's something that we track. And that's something where a lot of our schemes defensively are built on, okay, how do we limit paint touches? And then, you know, vice versa, offensively, how do we generate paint touches to either, you know, get rim finishes or get, you know, kick out threes or even get in there and get fouled. So those are just kind of two small examples of kind of how we best use analytics. And then, you know, also just effectively, you know, using our, you know, our plays, you know, this one set we have, you know, has a higher points per possession than the other set, and just kind of maximizing efficiency and effectiveness that way.
Yeah. I think when you start to look at those things that you feel impact winning, and then, as you said, then you can kind of design and scheme around, hey, we see that when we get into the paint, we score at a higher rate. And when we keep teams out of the paint, they score at a much lower rate. And so then, as you said, now you can start to design your schemes. Then obviously that leads to the development of drills and practice plans and putting actual bodies on the practice floor and getting guys to do things that are going to play out or play to those trends that you're seeing from an analytics standpoint. So when you're in the practice planning process, and I know we talked about it a little bit before when we were discussing how you use the previous day's film to sort of guide you into what you want to do in the next day's practice. But just when you guys are sitting down together as a coaching staff, putting together the practice plan, how does Coach Moser go about doing that? Is that something that you guys all talk about together and that's how the practice plan gets built? Does he build it himself off of input from the rest of the staff and then share it back to the staff for feedback? Or just what's the process that you guys use for building a practice plan on a daily basis?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think, you know, Coach Moser does a fantastic job at, you know, letting, you know, literally everybody on staff have a say, whether that's, you know, a GA, myself, you know, obviously all the way up through our assistant coaches. You know, he lets everybody have a, you know, a really big say in kind of how we formulate practice. And so, you know, if there's a specific drill somebody had from a previous school that they like, a previous coach that they worked under that they like, you know, coach is open to all suggestions. You know, obviously, you know, his 30 some plus years in coaching, he has, you know, his drills he likes, and he has different things that have been effective for him. And, you know, but our practice plan building is a very collaborative effort. Everybody has a say. I mean, you know, I'll normally type it up and kind of organize it in a logical way and organized manner. But no, everybody has a say. We, you know, we always do like a reminder defensive drill a day just to keep our minds sharp. You know, obviously a basic, you know, kind of shell drill. We'll shell a certain ball screen action, or we'll shell, you know, flex, shuffle, stagger, reel, whatever action it'll be, or just regular, you know, regular jump to the ball shell defense. So we'll do kind of a, you know, different set things. Obviously we'll, you know, we'll do some guards big offensive skill development. Some days we'll do, you know, some team shooting stuff, you know, and then obviously when we get into more, you know, more deeper preseason, practices get longer, and during the season practices tend to get a little shorter just because it's more scouting based and less, you know, live, you know, on their feet workload. So it kind of ebbs and flows throughout the year. But no, like I said, I mean, Coach Moser does a fantastic job at really making a collaborative effort to where everybody has a say and we all kind of, you know, have a voice in how we play in practice because, you know, at the end of the day, everybody's got a part in practice. You know, our GAs have to, you know, pass or rebound or do dummy defense or set screens or whatever. You know, our assistant coaches obviously have to help run the drills. And then obviously Coach Moser has to, you know, lead it all. And so, you know, if it doesn't make sense to one of our assistants, then it's hard to have a successful practice. And so I think, you know, we're all involved. We all just have a great ability to, you know, input when necessary and kind of, you know, just talk through in a really, you know, collaborative way.
Makes sense. All right. So that's a practice planning process. Tell me a little bit about what your game day looks like in your role and kind of how you as a staff get the team prepared and then kind of your role in that on a game day.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We have a game day tomorrow. So I'm kind of mentally thinking through this, the night before, which is great. But no, we'll do like a shoot around, you know, 5 hours before the game. You know, we'll go over different offensive points of emphasis, offensive plays, you know, and then obviously defensive points of emphasis. We'll go over some of the opponents, you know, common actions and such, talk through kind of the game plan and stuff, shoot some free throws, et cetera. You know, then obviously, you know, do pregame meal and stuff. And then, you know, when we come back, you know, for the actual game, it's, you know, it's all business. You know, we'll have, you know, obviously warm ups out on the court and such, but, you know, we'll have the guys come into the locker room and give a, you know, a little personnel overview, some offense, some defensive notes and such. You know, and then, you know, physically during the game, you know, this year they actually approved for our league video on the bench. And so I'm able to be on the bench with a computer with a live feed to the game. And so I'm able to help out our assistants and be able to talk to them about how they got us on this play or how they're guarding this certain play and stuff. So I'm able to, you know, help both our offensive and defensive coaches, you know, just gain little advantages here and there. And then I'm also responsible for the matchups coming out of a timeout. So I'll, you know, look who we have in the game, look who the opponents have a game and kind of just match up our guys as they head out on the court and stuff. So, from that perspective, I think we have a really great scouting process. We have a really good, you know, way about how we do game days and stuff. And just, you know, the game day is, you know, almost the final act and stuff. And, you know, our shoot around is just kind of a good dress rehearsal into, you know, kind of what we're trying to get in the game from the scout.
It's nice to be able to have that video capability right there on the bench, which, as you said, is something new to be able to pull off. So when guys come off the floor, are you having them sit down right next to you and show them, hey, here, let's look at this? Are you more doing it with the coaching staff? How do you see it more being useful with working with individual guys, or is it more useful for you as a staff to be looking at things that you see?
Just more useful with the staff for right now. You know, just kind of how the court's set up and stuff like that and how our bench is set up. It's more easier just to use it with the staff for now. But, you know, our assistants will show, you know, some of our guys, some individual clips at halftime and stuff, you know, different things like that. But no, we don't really, you know, I try not to overwhelm, you know, the players with too much during the game because, you know, a lot of times the players can, you know, our guys are smart enough to know, okay, I wasn't in on that ball screen or I wasn't plugging that hole or I wasn't tagging the roll or whatever it is. And so we kind of save that for after the game and just kind of for film review overall.
Gotcha. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. How soon after the game, when you guys get back in the locker room, regardless of one loss, how quickly are you diving into that video immediately after the post game talk and players are getting the shower? Are you already into the video at that point?
Yeah, no, pretty much. Just, you know, I'm either into the video from that game or trying to prepare for our next opponent and stuff. So yeah, I know it's a pretty late night on game days because you're either doing review of your own game or you're trying to get ahead for the next scout and stuff. But normally, like, you know, the scout coach who has the game will really dive deep into that film and do a, you know, really intense self scout because his next scout won't be for another, you know, four games or whatnot. So no, a lot of times though, it's, you know, from my position, I really got to work ahead. And, you know, I'm trying to be better at this year. But you know, a lot of times it's, I don't get to do as much self scout work as I would like because I'm already on the next opponent. So,
right. I got you. You have a game day superstition?
Oh gosh. You know, to be honest, something, it's actually
game day tradition, something that you do every time, every day. Maybe you're not like,
no, it's, I used to have to wear the same shoes every game, and then, then that kind of ran its course.
Then your budget increased and you were able to get a second pair of shoes. Is that what you're talking
about? I was going to say then it increased a little bit, but no, it's weird. I like, no matter whether I was, you know, I was a manager or my position now, I always, would get anxious, like, you know, 3 hours before the game. And then once it would start to get warmups and stuff, it would all go away. But it would be like three to four hours and stuff. So I would like almost never eat pregame meal just cause like I couldn't eat. I couldn't feel like the need to eat. And then after the game though, I'd just always be starving. And so, I would eat a lot after the game, just not much before the game, just cause of nerves and stuff. But no, that's the only real superstition, you know, that I've got, but yeah, I'm sure.
Anybody in the program have one that you are aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. No. Yeah. One of our former assistants, David Patrick, he always would brush his teeth like the minute before we'd walk out on the court. So
that's a good one.
That was one that I will remember. But no, it's funny because every year I go into the year being like, eh, I don't really have a superstition. And then I'll do one thing before like one win and it'll, you know, work. And then of course it'll have to be that thing that won the game. And so that will continue. So I'm sure there will be one that will come up mid year though. So
That's funny. It's funny how, again, you just kind of get, whether you call it a superstition or you call it a routine or something that you feel like just makes you comfortable that you have to do. I think we all kind of have some of those. It kind of depends on how you define it, right? How you define it. So, all right. So as you look ahead to the remainder of this season and kind of where you guys are at, where you're at in your career, what are you most looking forward to over the course of this season? Obviously, you know, you're looking forward to having a good year with your team, but just what are you looking for just on a personal individual level? And then just kind of what are you looking forward to with this particular group of teammates and this particular group of guys and your coaching staff? What's on the horizon that you're most excited about?
Yeah. You know, I'll answer the first part of that first, because a lot of times, you know, and it's for a good reason, because you're caught up in the team, you're caught up in the group. And obviously team success comes for all of our players and our coaches. Team success comes before any of us can get any individual, success and stuff. And so, you know, I think I need to definitely take more time and kind of not get so caught up in just the team and the next game mentality, to be able to, you know, just realize personal, you know, growth, whether that's, you know, even out of basketball. You know, you feel like, you know, you can grow as a person and grow as a learner and grow as a, you know, for me as a Christian, and, you know, in every season of, you know, life and in every literal basketball season. And so, you know, I think for me, just continuing to realize my personal growth, but also, you know, one thing I think, you know, is just to really, you know, dive deep into the relationships with the players, with the other coaches and such, because, you know, obviously you remember the wins and the losses, and it's, at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's a business of W's and L's, but just the people along with you for the ride, I think is so special. And that's been something where, you know, I look back and I just remember all the great people I've worked with, you know, in my short career in basketball and stuff. And so just enjoying the people, enjoying the relationships, enjoying the, you know, kind of stopping and smelling the roses instead of always being consumed with the next game, the next game, the next game, and just, you know, stopping and realizing, the people I'm working with, the players I'm getting to serve, the, you know, the time we have together, you know, on planes, on buses and hotels and tournaments, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, we're spending Thanksgiving together. We're spending, you know, a lot of Christmas break together. We're spending New Year's together. We're spending, you know, my birthday falls, you know, on a game day this year. So there's so many parts of life where you're spending with these people and so much time that you're sacrificing with these people that, just enjoying their presence and enjoying kind of, you know, what they're pouring into you, I think is something where, this year I want to do a better job at stopping and smelling the roses and really taking that to heart. And then from a team perspective, I think, before even any of the, make the NCAA tournament, win the league, make the Sweet 16, whatever that, those goals will all come. I'm looking forward to this group that we got this year, really just gelling together. I think we got a group of really competitive guys. I think we got a group of just amazing culture guys. We got a group of, super, super caring guys who really genuinely love one another and, genuinely love being coached and, being improved. And, after the game, they'll all text me and say, hey, can you send me five to 10 clips from today? I want to see this, or can you help me with this? Or do you have a clip that can you send me this play that we ran and stuff? And so, I think we have a really great group, like I said, and just watching, being able to see them gel. And, one of the things, I know I'm going a little long winded on this, but one of the things I love most about basketball is just it brings people from such unique, diverse backgrounds together. And it makes them have, one common goal, one common cause that they're all fighting for. And I think from our, coaches to our players and stuff, we all come from such unique, diverse, different backgrounds and, and such. And, just the act of, even if it's for one season, 6 months or, 9 months, whatever, and just everybody coming together for one common goal. I think that's something that's so special about this game and something I've grown to love so much about this game.
Yeah, it's well said on both of those fronts. And I think that you make a really good point about, I think your situation in particular, but I think the coaching profession in general, and that is during the season, it is such a whirlwind and there's so much going on and the games are coming so quickly once you get into your season that it is, as you said, it is difficult to stop and really look around and kind of appreciate what it is that you get to do every day and the people that you get to do it with. And I think you did a really good job of sort of capturing that sentiment and the idea that sometimes you got to just stop and look around and be thankful for what you have. And I think that applies to almost all of us in life. I know that I can be guilty of that for sure when there's a million things going on in life. And sometimes you're going from one task to the next, to the next, to the next. And you don't always stop and just say, hey, what am I doing here? And who am I doing it with? And I've got to take this opportunity to really reflect on that and be thankful for it. And it's hard to do. It's sometimes something that I think you have to be really conscious of. And so to hear you say that kind of heading into the season, I certainly wish you the best of luck in being able to accomplish that. And I know that, again, part of that is just being self-aware and thinking about it. And the fact that you're already contemplating that one game into the season is a good sign that you're going to be able to accomplish that. So again, I want to thank you for jumping out with us tonight, Dylan. Before we get out, I want to give you a chance to share how people can get in touch with you, reach out to you. I know there might be people out there that have questions about what you do in the video room, what kind of analytics you're doing. I know there's a lot of high school coaches that are in our audience that are always looking for a way to be able to upgrade what they do from a video and analytics standpoint. So just let people know how they can reach out to you. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, you kind of touched on, I would love to, connect with anybody who's willing to just learn more about video analytics, college basketball as a whole. And then the other thing I really pride myself on is, being a former manager and kind of getting to where I'm at now. I really want to help and pour into other managers, other GAs who really do want to pursue being in a video room and pursue the video and analytics path and stuff. So my Twitter is just DMIHALKE. That's just my first initial and my last name. And that's just the best way to reach out for me. To me, if you have any questions at all about my job, what I do on a day-to-day basis, or just want to, talk about basketball, the profession, life, whatever it is. And then, I also got Instagram, Dylan Mihalke, DYLANMIHALKE. And that's the best way to get in touch with me. And if you have any questions at all, I'd love to connect and get to know you. And obviously, I would love to help in any way I can.
Dylan, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to jump back on with us for, again, a second time. So we really appreciate that. And I'm sure there'll be a third time at some point here in the not too distant future. But good luck to you, Coach Moser, the rest of your staff, and the Sooners of Oklahoma as you guys head into your second game of the season tomorrow night and throughout the entire season. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.